I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. Today's Thursday. It's next hour. I believe we got Starla Brown coming in from Americans for Prosperity. I'll be honest with you, I didn't confirm with her. I saw her Tuesday night. I'm hoping she comes in. I wanted to. They are Americans for Prosperity around the country does some work on education, advocates for some freedom in education, and you know. It's pretty amazing talking to those things because I would just imagine the parents. I don't care the income level, the racial makeup. I don't care. Parents would probably really appreciate some extra choices for their kids, particularly the parents who see their kids in failing schools, schools that may be dangerous, schools that aren't teaching them anything. And there are all kinds of different ways to educate children. And the amazing thing is when you start thinking about the ideas of putting in some levels of competition, some levels of free market into education, why we've come to accept this idea that, you know, education's got to be provided by the government. Now, we want to be able to choose whatever kind of televisions. I mean, you look across the landscape when it comes to technology, and TVs is a great example. We see constant innovation. TVs have gotten... they've gotten better. The picture is better. The capability is better. The sizes are better. The weight is better. I don't know if you ever had to move one of those old televisions. I remember I had one of those big box TVs. I won it in a bet in a football pool. I won a 35-inch box television back in the 1990s. And I held on to this thing. It lasted for like 22 years. I don't know how many times I moved this thing, but it was a beast. Now a 98-pound woman can move a 65-inch television. So anyway, when you put in competition and allow some levels of free market, you get better quality for lower cost. And yet, for some reason with education, we don't do those things. We believe that the system is set up, the factory system of education is set up, and that's just what it is. And there's a lot of resistance at the governmental level to change that. It almost feels like they want us dumb. But hopefully we'll talk about some of these educational things. Mississippi's, and it, you know, there's so many things. I get eager. What's the word? I lack the patience that the political class exerts on people just to frustrate efforts and make things take 4, 5, 6 years. You know, we know Jackson, Mississippi has got some real problems right now. Anybody thinking that, well, maybe in the next 8 years they'll start really turning the tide on crime, or they're making some small improvements to the water system. These things are emergencies. And when it comes to education, Mississippi doesn't really have, if you really want to have productive citizens, if you want to stop crime, you've got one of the pieces of that is you've got to improve education. We don't have 5 or 6 or 10 years to try to improve our educational system in Mississippi. It's been declining for 50 years. And the political class always does these. Oh, they'll give you a little bit, but they frustrate your efforts to make any wholesale change. Mississippi needs radical change. When you're at the bottom of the list of a whole bunch of things, nibbling around the edge is really not enough. Education, you would think, would be one of those things. If the state legislature could look and think creatively, there's such a lack of creativity in government. Status quo just pays so well, to be honest with you. If status quo got you elected, if status quo got you power, then your incentives to really upset the apple cart are pretty small. But it shouldn't be that way for people. And if people do actually control our governments, which is obviously not really the case the vast majority of time because we don't exercise that control. If people wanted change, you would think you could move these politicians along. Anyway, you can tell I'm passionate about the issue, and if we talk about it next hour, you'll hear that again. I got some other stuff to get into today. Quotes of the day today. One of my favorite ones here, one of my favorite quoters, is H.L. Mencken. And this is a nice, succinct one. He says, "Every decent man is ashamed of the government he lives under." Amen. Every decent man is ashamed of the government he lives under. And this was really quite an interesting one from Martin Luther King. To kind of get inside the mind of this man, it's kind of interesting. When you see what the average American's going through right now, to realize, we talked yesterday about the fourth turning, and what the fourth turning ends up being is the guy, the Joe Sixpack, Jane Pinot Noir, that needs to sit around and just wants to watch the game and just take the kids to soccer practice. Eventually, things just get so oppressive and so bad for them that they actually get off their butts and they exercise their power, and that's when change actually happens. We have not reached that stage yet. The re-election of Michael Guest says the vast majority of Republicans in 3rd District of Mississippi are perfectly fine with the way things are because it hasn't really touched them yet. They're not uncomfortable yet, and that's really the message of a re-electing establishment people over and over. Of course, it's propaganda, it's brainwashing. But it's also the fact that they don't see a need for any change because they're doing okay. And maybe that's great. Maybe that's great that the vast majority of people in the 3rd District are still very comfortable. That's good. Enjoy it while you can. I believe those days may change for some of you. But I admire people who really get to a point, and certainly during the Civil Rights Movement, there were people leading that said it's time to actually do something. That's a long segue into this quote from Martin Luther King, which is a long one. He said, "You may be 38 years old, as I happen to be, and one day some great opportunity stands before you and calls you to stand up for some great principle, some great issue, some great cause. And you refuse to do it because you are afraid. You refuse to do it because you want to live longer. You're afraid that you will lose your job, or you're afraid that you will be criticized, or that you will lose your popularity. Or you're afraid that somebody will stab you or shoot you or bomb your house, so you refuse to take the stand. Well, you may go on and live until you are 90, but you're just as dead at 38 as you would be at 90. And the cessation of breathing in your life is but the belated announcement of an earlier death of the spirit." Wow. That's interesting. This is somebody who understood. You want to see these changes made, you either take a stand then, or you're really just basically a corpse just waiting to stop breathing. That to make these changes when they're necessary to be made, even at the risk of your popularity and even possibly your life, is worth the effort, because that's what life is about. It was interesting. Project Veritas back at it again. They really do some good work. A newly leaked document revealed by Project Veritas classifying what the agency, and this is the FBI, that what they believe are militia violent extremists. They've got a name for it, us, MVEs, militia violent extremist. The unclassified law enforcement sensitive document for FBI, internal use only, outlines symbols, images, phrases, events, and individuals that special agents should look for when identifying alleged domestic terrorists. Under the symbols section, the document claims MVEs, quote, justify their existence with the Second Amendment due to the mention of a, quote, well-regulated militia, unquote, as well as the right to bear arms. This is who special agents of the FBI should be on the lookout for. Below that, under commonly referenced historical imagery in quotes section, Revolutionary War images such as the Gadsden flag and the Betsy Ross flag are listed as signs of violent extremism. So if we could just keep this as a little secret between you and me, do not tell the feds that we have a Gadsden flag here in the studio. That is our little secret. If only there had been, at some point in recent American history, if only there had been a political party and a philosophy that had warned us about setting up a huge, powerful federal police force and constantly giving it more money and more power. If only there had been some political party standing on the sidelines, marginalized by everybody as a bunch of crackpots, saying, I don't know, you might not want to give the FBI so much power and money. Oh, that's right. There was one. That was the Libertarian Party that warned you about an overarching federal police force as conservatives out there cheered for it. Now, and the funny thing is, now it's going about 180 degrees. The conservatives out there are starting to understand what libertarians have been warning you about for decades and decades with this federal police force. And now the Democrats are in love with the deep state. I guess that as long as the government can continue to stand and prosper and grow more powerful and more wealthy, as long as they keep half of the people on their side. Now the Democrats think the deep state loves them. It's never going to be the case. It wasn't for you conservatives. It won't be for you liberals. End the FBI. I'll be right back.
I want a girl with a mind like a diamond. I want a girl who knows what's best. I want a girl with...
Next segment, we're going to have Lindsey Beckham call in, tell us she is with Moms for Liberty out there in Madison fighting against the school boards and some of the pornographic material that they are choosing to put on the shelves. The moms were successful in having some of it removed. They have restored some of these reading material back to the libraries. Lindsay's got the details. I'm going to have her call in and talk about exactly what took place. This meeting was Monday night, and I'll be interested to know how many people showed up. Anyway, we'll talk to Lindsay in a few minutes. In the Martin Luther King quote that I read earlier, one of his things was, you know, people are really afraid to stand up, to be either outspoken or to take action. And one of the things is we're afraid you're going to lose your, you know, lose your popularity. I do not suffer this problem, and I will continue to speak what I believe to be the truth. And one of the least popular things I do is challenge the notion of Bidenflation. I'm really sick of it, to be honest with you. Because there's such an opportunity to teach people what actually causes inflation, so maybe we don't do it again, but instead we've decided to politicize it. And when I run across stories that bolster this point, I'm going to bring them to you. And what may be the most dovish double rate hike in history? Moments ago, the Bank of England raised rates by the expected 50 basis points to 1.75% and announced it was starting gilt sales. Here's the kicker. It's what I'm trying to point out. Yet at the same time, this is the Bank of England, their central bank there, that caused the inflation in England. Yet at the same time, the bank forecast a, quote, long recession, unquote, driven by soaring inflation. Now, one thing is interesting about that. It seems really, are we the only Western country where our government just flat out will just refuse to tell us the truth? They just will not. I mean, I'm no fan of the Bank of England. Do not get me wrong. But I've been covering COVID statistics, vaccination, hospitalization statistics from Australia, from Canada, from England, from Germany, from Italy, from Israel, where they tell the people, hey, 95% of the people we're seeing in the hospital have been double or triple vaxxed. Here in the United States, they tell us that it's only the unvaccinated that this shot still protects you against serious disease and hospitalization and death. At least the Bank of England. We got to go overseas also. Here in this country, we've had two quarters of negative growth, and our central bank and our government comes out and says, this isn't a recession. That's crazy talk. I know we've defined a recession as two negative quarters of growth since 1955, but no, it's not a recession. And then they said, but even if it was a recession, it's going to be shallow and short. You have to go overseas to England, where they say, yeah, this is going to be a long recession driven by soaring inflation. The hike comes as officials predicted a UK recession will begin in the fourth quarter and last all the way through next year. That's the longest slump since the financial crisis. Officials expect the economy to shrink by around 2.1% in total, and inflationary pressures have intensified, this is a quote, intensified significantly. Here they tell us, oh, it's transitory. There's no inflation. It's going away. It's peaked. the BOE, the Bank of England, also boosted its forecast for the peak of inflation from 13.1% to 13.3% in October amid a surge in gas prices, and this goes on. That will sharpen the cost of living crisis that will see real disposable incomes fall more than at any time in around 60 years. So they're actually coming out and telling the people in England, hey, this is here, it's bad, and it's going to get worse. Here they try to pretend it's not happening. It never did happen. And if it did happen, it's Putin's fault. And this is why I jump on this Bidenflation thing. Here's Japan. For Japan, the cost of more than two decades of deflation are clear. The country remains prosperous, safe, and comfortable. But what many Japanese have not noticed is that the rest of the world has been getting richer in absolute terms while their country has largely stayed in place. And the reason I bring this up is, here's what's going on in Japan right now. I'm going to get back to this deflation in Japan over in a sentence that was written in this piece. In Japan, energy costs jumped 20.8%, the steepest rise since 1981, while cooking oil increased 34.7%. Another measure of inflation at the wholesale level, the corporate goods price index jumped to 9.5% year-on-year to March, due in part to the dire situation in Ukraine. Japan. So we got England and Japan reporting all this inflation. I actually have a chart up here, or a little thing. It's got little nations' flags on it. And this is how I challenge this idea of Bidenflation. Now, I don't know if there's new people listening. I hate to repeat myself, but you have to be conscious on talk radio that people don't listen all the time. New people come in, may not understand. This guy must like Joe Biden. Joe Biden will make inflation worse. He's a corrupt mental defective. And every policy, everything he touches will turn to garbage. But it's not Bidenflation. Biden didn't cause the inflation in England. He's not causing the inflation in Japan. Here's a list of other countries here. We got, I believe this is, I got to go by the flags here. So I think this is New Zealand, 6.1%. Canada, 8.1%. The EU itself is at 8.6%. Brazil at 11.9%. France has got a 15.9% inflation. Italy, 8.5%. Germany, 7.6%. England, 9.4%. The U.S., 9.1%. Somebody call and explain to me exactly how Joe Biden created inflation all around the world within about 18 months in office. You see, the problem is you can't. And what is so aggravating to me about this is that if Republicans were honest, instead of using this as a political tool to try to win more power and win the midterms, which I think is important, they could do it still by educating. They could show how Joe Biden's making inflation worse. But if Republicans were honest, if conservative talk show hosts understood, they could actually educate a lot of people moving forward to demand less government and an end to the central bank that creates the boom-bust cycle that hurts so many people. But they won't. Republicans won't be honest. And most conservative talk show hosts, I'm speaking largely of the kind of the national guys, you Sean Hannity's out there, any of them that use this term Bidenflation, they're using Republican Party talking points because that's their goal, is to create more Republicans. But the problem is, this solves absolutely nothing. And it does risk my popularity to explain to you that it was many of the policies under Donald Trump and the endless money printing under Donald Trump that is a large part of the reason you are paying the prices you are paying right now. Spending, particularly the obscene levels of COVID spending. I don't know if anybody remembers Donald Trump talking about, bragging about how nobody had ever seen a massive spending package like the $2.3 trillion package, COVID relief package that he enthusiastically signed. It was this money printing that kicked off this inflation, and then Biden came in and did it again. And it's just such a shame to me. I can look at these things, and the sad thing is that I don't know how people hear this, if they even can understand this when I'm saying it to you. Why is it that Italy is suffering with 8.5% inflation? Now, the only common denominator to all these countries that I'm listing off to you is they all have central banks. They all freaked out about COVID. And in the response to that freak out, that overarching Orwellian control over society they exercised during COVID, they all did one thing. They all printed money. They all increased their money supply. And it is such a shame because I believe that Republicans could still score big points by pointing out that this is actually the root cause of inflation rather than laying it. There's a ton of things to lay around Joe Biden's neck. It's not hard to target him. You got all the kinds of opportunities to point out what a disaster Joe Biden is. But with this one thing, if you could actually identify the cause and actually campaign, you know why Republicans won't do that? Because they want the Federal Reserve to print up money for their stuff. Republicans are thrilled to death that they will convince conservatives out there to blame Joe Biden for inflation and vote for the Republicans. And when they get into office, as we have seen during the Trump administration, the Bush administration, when they get into office, they will use that Federal Reserve to print off just as much money as they possibly can to support what they want to do. That's why they don't tell you the truth about inflation, that it is the size of government and the printing of money that causes inflation, not one brain-addled dementia patient. They can't let you know that, because if you ever knew that, they wouldn't be able to get away with it when they're in power. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. I have got on the phone with me. So Monday, Lindsey Beckham came in, or she called in. We were talking about the school board meeting. They have been fighting the battle down there over some of the reading material provided to the kids. This group has been very energized about getting masks off of kids, stopping the COVID restrictions in the schools, allowing parents to come in there and see their children in the schools, as well as the critical race theory stuff, on guard against materials that were promoting that, and the gender bending stuff. So they have really been on the case for all of the social engineering that they're attempting in the schools. And they had a school board meeting on Monday to find out the fate of some of the books that a lot of the parents were challenging as appropriate reading material for our youngsters. So I wanted to have Lindsey back on because the meeting didn't seem to really go so well. Lindsey, are you with me?
I'm here.
So tell us, so you went down, give us just a little bit of background so people understand about the fact that you guys went, did your research, looked up what kind of books were on there, cross-referenced that with books that you knew were of concern, actually got some of these books and read some horrific things in them, challenged them, and tell us kind of how you got started and then what you were proposing to the school board over the last few months.
All right, so back in January, we took a list of 22 books that we had found in Madison County School libraries. Some of those were in middle school, some of those were in high school, some of those were in both middle and high school. We didn't believe that any of those 22 books should be in any of our schools at all. And so we took a list of 22 books to our school board, and we finally got an answer from them this past Monday night on what they have decided to do after they have formed two committees. They did pull them back in April, and they required parental consent to check out, but they were still under the review process by these committees. So Monday at the school board meeting, they let us know that they have decided that they will now have three different categories. And so one category, they were going to put books back into full circulation for 6th through 12th grades. The second category, they were going to put books back into full circulation for 9th through 12th grades. And then they did decide to add a third category where these books would be controlled and could be checked out with parental consent for students in 9th through 12th grades.
So these are kind of like the Playboy magazines that at the convenience stores they keep back behind the counter, you know, and they have to card you to get them. So they've got their little dirty section there is kind of
right.
what our libraries are doing now.
Right, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what's happening. So 10 of the 22 did go into this controlled circulation category. So that maybe, I guess, a start.
Yeah.
Seems like we still have a long way to go to get to where we want to be. We were supposed to also hear the new policy moving forward own library books, basically the policy that would be taking place from here on out on how these books will be vetted before they're allowed into the libraries, and also a new policy on how to challenge these books once they are found by parents and they want to have them removed or put into this controlled circulation category. We did not get either of those things Monday night.
Well, I'm sure they've got another committee that will set up a committee to study the first committee's findings, and then they'll take those things to a committee, and then some by 2025 they'll let you know exactly what's going on. When you talk about, you said some of these are in the controlled area. What does that mean? A parent has to approve them checking this book out? Is that what it is?
Yes, you have to have parental consent to check out these books that are in this controlled category.
So what the books that went into Gen Pop, back into full circulation there, what kind of stuff did they put back on the shelves that you guys were objecting to? So what do the kids have unlimited access to right now?
Well, let's see, I'm gonna try to keep it family friendly.
Yeah,
today.
I know.
But, I mean, some of these books contain materials such as children being forced to hold down other children while they're being raped, parents being shot in the head as children watch their parents commit suicide, or there's one boy who has been raped and he's bleeding from his anus. I mean, it's just horrific material.
And
these were put back into full circulation.
What is the idea? Again, you know, if there's anybody listening going, oh, there's the book burners, there's the censors. All of this stuff is available on Amazon. I'm sure Barnes & Noble's either got it on the shelves or you can order it from them. I mean, these books are in existence. Nobody is hunting down the author. Nobody is trying
Absolutely.
To silence anybody. It is just a matter of a child who does not need this kind of adult material being able to go down the aisle when they've got their, you know, their study period and they just happen to pull out a book. Because I'll tell you, one of the things I found when I first, you know, I think we went to a meeting and they were discussing some of these books, and one of them, I can't remember the title of it, but it's got a bunch of emojis on the cover. I mean, it is just the cutest looking little book. Well, I can't remember. Do you remember the title of that one? Because I feel like I should warn parents about it.
I know.
But it was...
I'm not sure which one that is.
It's got like a cartoon cover with a bunch of emojis and, you know, text talk, all the abbreviations. And it just looks...
Well, that's a problem that children don't even know what they're... What
right.
they're about to see or about to read, and parents certainly don't know.
Right.
Because we're not with our children when they go to the school library and go to pick out a book. And like you said, you would never know looking at the cover that type of material is inside of these books.
And I would imagine that 98% of all parents at these schools just assume that their children wouldn't have access to that. I mean, a lot of the books that were discussed that I saw, and I saw the covers of them, particularly this one that had these emojis and stuff on it. If I had walked by my child's room and seen this laying on their bed, and I know they've gotten it from the school library, I would have just thought, well, you know, it's probably not a book I want. It's probably for kids, but it looks cute. You know, I mean, I just would have never assumed that there was something that I need to go through and try to find this material. Now, here's my question for the school board, or if they've addressed this at all. What is the urgent? Are these things such literary masterpieces that we just cannot deny our children? The children just must have access to these things. You know, what is their defense of these? There are, it's interesting. I read a pretty good amount, and I've got, you know, people who send me books to read. And so, I mean, there is so much literature out there. It's almost stunning that so many human beings have put out so much work. There is a lot of great stuff out there to read. Why do these books, why is it so important that children have access to these particular books?
Right. Well, in my opinion, you know, this has not been said by the board, obviously, but in my opinion, after attending every single school board meeting for over a year and addressing this issue every month since January, I believe that they don't know how these books got into our library in the first place. They have not had a system set up where they have got people that are doing the diligence of truly vetting these books and truly reading these books before they're allowed into the libraries. I think they're taking recommendations from different companies that have been trustworthy in the past, and they are automatically just putting these into circulation. And I think the biggest problem is they don't want to hear the kickback from parents or from other people about banning a book, because that's been the biggest issue. And, you know, the biggest criticism is that we're banning books, and that's just, you've never been on the right side of history if you ban a book. Well, we've got children that can't even go see an R-rated movie without parental consent, yet they have full access to the same type of material in a book in their school.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, I'm no prude in any way, but I am a dad, and I was stunned at some of the stuff that I heard in those things. It's things that would repulse me to read as a middle-aged man. And then thinking about, you know, a 12-year-old child reading this kind of stuff, I mean, it is some pretty horrific stuff. And I think parents who are not coming to these school board meetings, and we can't, you know, like you said, I wish you could read these on the air so that people would truly understand exactly what they are, but we can't. The FCC would fine us and kick us off the air if we read these books that are being presented to our children.
Right. That's a scary thought, that you can't come on the radio and read something that is fully available for your sixth grader at middle school.
Did you, were there parents there that were promoting, I don't want to use the term promoting these books, but were taking the side of allowing kids access to this stuff? Was there opposition at this last meeting, or has there been parental opposition to y'all as you've gone through trying to get these books removed?
No, there was not.
Yeah.
We've heard a couple of different times that there were going to be some parents show up. We have not seen any parents show up yet to defend these books, although we did have two high school students show up to one of our meetings a couple months ago and defend the library books. We did hear later on that they had help from a teacher in writing what they were going to say to the school board.
Sure. And, you know, these kids are young and impressionable. You can't, really can't. I was there for that meeting, and that girl was very well-spoken. She was obviously a very intelligent girl. And, you know, the idea, if it's been told to her, hey, look, you've got a bunch of parents out there that are trying to strip you of your rights to, you know, you can manipulate a child very, very easily into believing that she's, you know, that her rights are under attack. And she will probably feel differently when she's a mom. So I give kids a pretty wide latitude of, you know, where they stand there. But it is interesting that the school board can look at parents who show up meeting after meeting or engaged with them through email, through phone calls, you know, that are all opposed to these things, yet they can basically take the side of the side that has no representation. I mean, there's no parents out there demanding more pornography on the school shelves, just none. But the school board just cannot, you know, I want to end the IRS and the Federal Reserve System. Now, I understand that's a pretty heavy lift. You'd have to change a lot of things about our society. That could take a while, and it would be very catastrophic. Taking 20 books off the shelf of the library takes about 15 minutes. You know, and the fact that this is now a 8-month process of committees and the rest of this stuff, when the parents are asking for this for their children, is insane to me. This is not a hard problem.
And the committees that we have not been privy to the information of who makes these, appointed these committees, who made up these committees. We were told that those people wanted to remain anonymous. It was a little bit shocking to me, some of the ones that they chose to put back into full circulation versus some of the ones that they put on the controlled list, because there was such vast difference between the two. Some of the ones that were put on the controlled list, in my opinion, after reading them, were mild in comparison to some of the ones that they put back into full circulation.
Yeah.
So when asking about that, we were told, you know, well, there are different people on the committee that read the different books, and then they did come together and discuss them. But, you know, obviously we have no idea who appointed those people to those committees or who those committees were made up of.
Shocking. Shocking. They don't want people to know who's making that decision.
Right.
And just to mention it again, we talked about it on Monday, you went to one of the school board meetings and read from one of these books. What was their reaction when you started reading in public from some of these books?
very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You could see the look they were shooting towards each other, just very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and so, I mean, and they're human beings too. This is what's so odd about this. It's almost like they're held hostage. Are they enthusiastic in fighting back and taking up the cause of these books, or do you feel like there's some power above them that is forcing this issue?
You know, they're definitely not enthusiastic about it. I think that they were shocked to hear that it was actually read out loud to them. I don't think they had taken our list and opened up any of the books and actually read them to see what type of material was inside these books. But I think once it was read aloud, they were shocked. And I know that they have to have a problem with that material being readily available in our schools. So there's got to be something.
Well, you know, I mean, there are some great literary masterpieces out there that have got controversial stuff in them, you know, that have withstood the test of time. And you know, there are some concepts that are a little difficult for children. But this is the stuff that I read really offered nothing in terms of, you know, enrichment of learning. I mean, it was really just pretty debased stuff that was in there. And this is the thing that I really find amazing. We gotta go in a second, but let me ask you, how many parents attended this meeting?
This last one, I would say we probably had 20, 25 people.
Yeah. And that's a good showing. You know, that's a decent showing for you. I don't mean that's a good showing in overall. It should
be
2,000.
Especially considering that they had a meet the teacher for some of our elementary schools held at the exact same time as the school board meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. They do not make these things easily accessible to, you know, particularly to working parents and those kinds of things. Well, all right. Well, I appreciate the update on that. So you had what could be defined as maybe some small victory in restricting access to a handful of books, but the problem persists. Like essentially, is where we are right now.
Right.
Is there any?
We'll just keep on keeping on.
Is there any further review? Are the committees still meeting?
No, I think the committees are finished. I think that we will be emailing. Possibly talking to some of the board members, you know, and asking that there be a reconsideration of the reconsideration committee. So we'll see what happens with that.
Man, dealing with the government's just like banging your head against a wall. It's so ridiculous. Common sense just flies completely out the window, and these bureaucracies just chew up time and just continue to cause harm. It's unbelievable.
It certainly feels that way.
Well, good thing you guys are out there fighting. This is Lindsay Beckham. If anybody wants information on what's going on, is there a... Do y'all have a website or anything like that where people can get more information on this, or how should they reach out?
Yes. Well, we have a web. If you go to momsforliberty.org, and then you can search for Madison County and get in touch with one of us, and we'll be glad to add you to the Facebook page. So keep everybody updated for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks, Lindsay. Appreciate the update.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Talk to you next time.
Thanks,
bye-bye. Holy cow. Yeah. We have problems in our educational establishment here, and it's such a shame. I've said it many times. I sent my kids to 12 years of Madison County Public Schools, and it was like Mayberry. I was impressed with a lot of the teachers. Some, a little bland, not, you know, as I said, I don't think they were learning to split the atom, but it really felt like a safe, very positive environment for my children for 12 years. Enjoyed interacting with the administrations, with the extracurriculars. I did a lot of volunteering in homerooms. I proctored tests. I helped with field days. I did it all. I was very involved in my kids when they were going to school. It is a shame to know that it has got this kind of seedy underbelly to it that just is almost too entrenched to address. I'll be right back.
I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right, only got about a minute left in this hour. We're going to come back. We've got Stone Clanton and Starla Brown in from Americans for Prosperity, and we're going to talk about what they've got going on. We had a meeting on Tuesday night and talked about education. There's just so many missed opportunities out there. There's so many things we could be doing for our kids. to not struggle against a system that is just not serving them in a lot of different cases. And as I said, you know, Madison and Rankin County schools have had great reputations for the longest time. People move to Madison County for the schools. I did that. I moved my family to Madison because we wanted access to the schools there. If we had stayed in Jackson, where we originally were, we probably would have been faced with private school tuition. As much as I am a graduate of Jackson Public Schools, it just wasn't an option for us. So we moved to Madison for the schools. But, you know, we've seen over the last couple of years a lot of problems with education across the board. These library issues are one of them. CRT is another one of them. COVID restrictions are another one. So there's, you know, a lot of creative things we could be doing with education that would solve a lot of these problems if they would just allow us to do them. So we'll talk about that and more with Americans for Prosperity when we come back. Stick around.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul. You're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining us. Today is Thursday. Every Thursday, we do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour from 10 to 11 o'clock, and we have Americans for Prosperity coming here and tell us what they are attempting to do for the state. They also, Americans for Prosperity is a national organization with chapters in a whole lot of states, but they are also involved in what's going on in Washington, D.C., so we're going to catch up on some of those things today. We got Stone Clinton and Starla Brown in office with us, or the studio with us today. How are y'all?
Good.
Doing pretty good.
Good. So what's on the radar these days? We were talking a little bit during the break. You guys are paying attention to, I don't know if you've heard, it is welcome news to all Americans that the Biden administration and the Democrats are about to get inflation under control. They've got a plan.
Oh, yes, they have a plan. And, you know, I was thinking about this over the weekend. So this bill is called the Inflation Reduction Act, yeah. Right? And I was thinking, that's probably the worst name I've heard for a piece of legislation since the Affordable Care Act,
Patriot Act.
Right. But Here's the really, really interesting part of their plan. Inside the Inflation Reduction Act, or as we like to say, the Manchin-Schumer Tax and Spending Reconciliation Package, which is what they're working towards. And there are all kinds of tax increases. There's all kind of bad stuff in this. It's nothing in there that makes sense for reducing inflation. But there's a piece in there. So a couple of years ago, I guess, we had an extension from Washington, D.C., for the ACA, right? So there was like a cost of, it was $64 billion that basically kind of extended and you repeated and expanded all these kinds of things in the ACA.
Affordable Care Act.
Right.
Obamacare.
The Obamacare, right. The other very badly named bill because it was not affordable care. Yeah. And in fact, most people, you know, a lot of people lost their insurance and lost anything that would even resemble that. Now, we do have something called the personal option that we work on, not only at the federal level, but at the state level, that makes a lot of sense to actually do free market health care. But in this bad bill that's supposed to reduce inflation in their specific plan, they're actually trying to extend these subsidies. And I don't think a lot of people realize that because they just hear the name and they say, oh, okay, it's an Inflation Reduction Act. So we've got a few things in there. But there's green energy in there. It's just a litany of things.
Well, didn't they just take a spending bill and they just slap this name on it just because inflation is the thing that everybody worries about, so they want to make it look like they're fighting it. And to their credit, but I understand why. Because, 99% of the people don't understand what causes inflation in the first place. So, you know, they don't know how to solve it either.
Right. Well, there's even, you know, there's even a repeal of President Trump had done something while he was in office. So these PBMs or pharmacy benefit managers, which a lot of people don't realize their role.
That the middleman.
Right. The middleman. Yeah. Right. And middleman, what do they usually do? Take some money.
Take
right.
A big. Yeah.
A big, big piece. Well, so there was a rule that he put in place that would have repealed a lot of things, and it saved about $122 billion over 10 years. it's really a budget gimmick that they're talking about. But at the end of the day, they're trying to take back these rebates and savings that were supposed to go back into the American taxpayers' pocket.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at, you know, that's in there. Let's repeal that. Let's make sure those PBMs are getting their fair share.
Did anything ever happen with them? I mean, did any action take place that actually started removing these middlemen?
No. They're still out there. They're still part of the process. In fact, Stone, you and I were talking with the state legislature about really the difficulty of understanding what it is they do,
yeah,
and where the money goes and how they do this. But price controls are prescription drug price controls are a horrible thing, right? They do not allow the free market to work, and they actually in the long term wind up costing taxpayers and everyone more money. And so there's price controls in this bill. There's a methane and Superfund fees portion. I haven't even read about that, but just reading it sounds like a little fishy to me, right? But this is absolutely going to raise taxes. I mean, there are not just on corporations, but on everybody.
Now, is this the bill?
Everybody's going to be affected.
15% minimum corporate tax in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yep. And corporations, you know, I say it a million times. Corporations do not pay taxes. People do. So anything, right. You know, I agree that some corporations have carved themselves out nice, juicy little chunks of the tax code to not pay taxes. But if they are forced to pay these taxes, they will pass that along to the customer ultimately. So, if from the poorest person out there, you will begin to pay more in taxes.
Right. Well, and you know, there's a piece of the bill, one of my personal favorites, invest in IRS enforcement.
Oh yeah, is this the 89,000 new agents?
Not only are we going to raise your taxes, not only are we going to make inflation worse with this bill, we're going to make sure we have a way to enforce it and spend money to do that.
Yeah.
So, the Senate right now. You know, we were talking about this a little bit. Their parliamentarian was trying to make some sort of determination about whether this can go through reconciliation. But look, the critical.
What does that mean? Do you understand what that means as somebody who understands government better than I do?
Well, it would be the approach in which the bill could be passed. Like, so it's the amount of votes it's going to take. But in this scenario, and Kristen Sinema, Senator Sinema, is going to be that key swing vote, and she's waiting to hear from the parliamentarians. And then that way, you know, it's just
so if they consider it, if they consider it a reconciliation bill, then it passes with 51 votes, and Kristen Sinema matters. If they don't consider a reconciliation bill, it takes 60 votes to pass. Correct.
Correct.
So then it's dead. Then
right. So she's kind of waiting for that. But if she becomes that critical swing vote, I would urge everyone that's listening to the show, whether you live in her state or not, to reach out to her. You're still a taxpayer to the federal government.
Yeah.
And if she is going to be the one person who makes that decision, I would be calling her. I would be calling her. Ask people to do that.
Why did Manchin...
Call your own senators as well. But I think we're in good shape here. But
why in the world did Manchin, who's from West Virginia, this coal state, why is he signing on to this green stuff? I thought he was kind of the line in the sand that was going to stop some of this stuff. They must have gotten him somehow.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of stuff in the media about some sort of closed door meetings and, you know, meeting this person and that person meeting and trying to figure out to get him, you know, back on board because he's been opposed to this. I still have problems knowing the people that I know in West Virginia. Don't know everyone, obviously, but the people that I know that live up there, these are not policies that as a taxpayer or as a citizen in West Virginia would support.
Yeah, no.
So why he's headed that direction, it's really, you know, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, right? It doesn't make a lot of sense for a state. Certainly doesn't make any sense for America as a whole. So that's one of the things we're looking at this week. Unfortunately, this probably, you know, could potentially go through the weekend. So I just encourage everybody to keep an eye on this. Make phone calls. You can start making them now. You know, you don't have to wait until they figure out which way they're going to vote or how this is going to be packaged. But, you know, let every member of Congress, whether it's the House, Senate side, everybody start blowing up those phones. Like, I mean, really start calling people and letting them know that, you know, you oppose this. People are struggling right now. I mean, you know, we've had this true cost of Washington tour going on around the state, and And we've, you know, we've done everything from roll back the price of gas to rolling back the price of a steak dinner to, you know, rolling back back or helping people with their groceries. And we've been all over the country. And it is just heartbreaking story after story of the struggle that people are going through right now to afford things. And we're in a recession. I'm going to say it. Okay?
No, come on now.
I know. I'm not going to twist the definition. I'm going to go by that. But the thing is, right now, the housing crisis that we're about to see in the rental community, that hasn't really – it's started, but it hasn't hit in the full force. And I think over the next couple of months, you're you know, some of the projections that you see now, you're going to start to see people not even be able to, you know, to afford housing. So what are we going to do then?
Yeah.
Crime is on the rise. We have all these things going on. I mean, it's chaos out there.
I did a story a couple of days ago. They did a study of, I can't remember the group who did this, but they polled business conditions. They found that 45% of small restaurants could not afford their July rent. 47% of small retailers could not pay July rent. Salons was the other thing. I think it was 42% of small salons could not afford their rent. I mean, those seem like very big numbers. Essentially, half of small restaurants can't afford the space they're in. That's not sustainable. That's going to be a lot of pain for a lot of people with nothing, you know, nothing coming that says that's going to change. There's nothing on deck that says, well, yeah, but they've got some relief coming. It's not like we're in the middle of lockdowns right now and they can't serve food. But as soon as the lockdowns are lifted and the customers come back, everything will be fine. No, this is just where we are right now. That's a lot of pain.
Yeah, I mean, me and Kate were talking about this on the way back yesterday, driving down and just going through. We were talking about the start of the pandemic and how everything just kind of went to pot then with the pandemic shutdowns, economic shutdowns everywhere, and we started to recover some, and then the inflation started, and it's just, I don't know, I'm just listening to you. I honestly don't know what to say because it seems to be no end in sight for right now.
Well, it was interesting. I was listening to a Dave Smith podcast, and he was pointing out the fact that essentially what they've done to, you know, to Main Street and to a lot of people is they destroyed their way of life for a period of time with COVID lockdowns, and then as we're emerging from that, they destroyed the currency that these people have. I mean, that is a 1-2 punch that is going to take a long time to recover from.
Well, I mean, there's facades everywhere, and it's again, it's with the bill that we're talking about, but it's also the gas tax holiday. None of it's real.
Right.
None of it's actually going to fix the spending problem. Excuse me, not the spending problem, but the printing of money problem.
Yeah.
None of it actually means anything.
Right. And in Washington, D.C. right now, taxation, spending, you know, printing money, all of these things, none of which are solutions to inflation, are just continuing. And now you have a bill that just wants to spend more and tax more.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if I'm the American citizen out there, not someone like son of myself, who this is what we engage in on a day-to-day basis. It's our not just our avocation, but our vocation, right? But if I'm the average person sitting out there, watching the evening news, there's got to be a part of you that's saying, hey, government is definitely out of control, and what are we going to do about it, right? And so...
Did you hear this clip of the Mary Daly? She's one of the Fed governors out in San Francisco.
Mm-mm.
Did you hear this? All right. Well, y'all check this out, and I was going to play this last hour. I ran out of time. So this is Mary Daly. She is, I think she's the Fed. Let me make sure I get her title right, because this is one of those let them eat cake things. Yeah, San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly. She makes $422,900 per year. That means she is taking home $35,241.67 a month, and every week she's making $8,132. She was asked about inflation and the pain that it's causing and how it's affecting her life. This is what she said.
Who follows up with the question, where are you personally seeing the impact of inflation in your own daily life?
You know, I have to say that I live, you know, I don't like the pain of inflation anymore. I see prices rising, but I have enough that I can make substitutions, that I can do things. So I'm not immune to gas prices rising, food prices rising. I sometimes balk at the price of things, but I don't find myself in a space where I have to make trade-offs because I have enough. Many, many Americans have enough.
Wow, Mary. You know, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, she's of course has taken a great deal of heat for this, but this is one of your Federal Reserve, and these are the people, and this is, boy, I talk about the Federal Reserve a lot, and I think it probably gets annoying to people, but it's so important people understand this is one of these women who sat in these committees that printed up all this money, has told you that they are, you know, responsible for all the prosperity in this country if they just do just enough. And essentially, she has made herself wealthy. She's also one of these people that had to do a lot of divesting of her investments when this new law came out, when they caught these guys at the Federal Reserve trading basically on inside information. And she's basically just saying, inflation doesn't bother me. I mean, and it's no different. Nancy Pelosi does probably, if you pinned her down and put a gun to her head to tell you how much a gallon of milk cost, I bet she could not tell you, I don't know, $100? I mean, these people don't live with us. They are not of us. And they cannot fix a problem that they do not understand how it's affecting people.
Right. And, you know, we talked about this Tuesday night when we were talking about the education piece, right? People in some neighborhoods have the dignity of having more. And listen, I'm not knocking success.
Sure.
If you can go out there tomorrow and become a millionaire, God love you.
Yeah,
go do
absolutely.
It, right? Go out there. Go out there and make your mark. That's what a free market's all about. We want people to have everybody, you know, there aren't equal outcomes, but equal opportunities exist. And go do your pursuit of happiness, right? Go live your life and hopefully with liberty, right? As we say. So I think the problem that I see with someone like her and that kind of thing is like, she doesn't actually care about the dignity of all people.
No.
She doesn't care about that person over here who's really being impacted by the bad policies that are being just piled on other people, right? Oh, doesn't impact me, so I don't care.
Right.
I'm protected, right? My protectionism, my attitude is. And I don't think it's not an equal application of your heart, that's for sure. And so to have that mindset and to throw that in the American taxpayers' face today with what when people are, we have elderly people that are making decisions about whether to purchase the medicine they need
or
whether to eat. And I just find something like that incredibly appalling.
Yeah. Well, Little Caesar's Pizza, I grew up on that. You know, and for eons, it was $5 hot and ready. And this might not sound like a lot, but now it's over $6 now.
Yeah, no.
And this year
was
the first time it's ever hit over $6. And for eons, it's been $5 hot and ready.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that dumbs it down, but that really simplifies it.
No, it does.
You could explain that to a third grader.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's the percentage, too. You know, I went to a Dollar Tree the other day. They have got a sign on the door now that says, after decades of, you know, keeping prices low, we are now $1.25. Well, you know, a quarter. Who cares about a quarter? It's a 25% increase across the board in their goods just in one fell swoop.
I could easily explain that to my 8-year-old little cousin.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And just explaining the cause to them is where it gets a little tedious. Everybody and the politicization of it, both pointing at Putin, pointing at singularly at Joe Biden, leaving the real culprits of government spending and the Fed out of it, driving me insane. But anyway, we got to take a quick break. We're talking to Starla Brown, Stone Clanton with Americans for Prosperity. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, talking to Starla Brown, Stone Clanton from Americans for Prosperity. I got to play another clip for you. I thought that clip was so good. This is the White House Economic Advisor, Brian Deese. He's one of these guys. It's been pretty amazing to watch them roll out all these people who are saying this two negative quarters is not a recession, and then playing their quotes from like 3 months ago.
I watched like a 3-minute clip earlier.
Yeah, I love the supercut. God love the people out there that take the time to go back and hold it. And, you know, I was talking about this the other day. You would really think with the internet and with the quick access we have to statements, to stories, to videos of the past, you would would think that would increase accountability these days, because you would think that the people in power would think to themselves, oh, they're going to catch me being a wild hypocrite and, you know, lying to them because they can. It doesn't seem to have made any difference whatsoever. We just want hypocrisy is like the national pastime now.
Yeah, I was watching some stuff on social media last night. Not this particular clip you're going to play, but just in general. But on both sides, right?
Yes, absolutely.
On both sides,
absolutely.
Lying has become a normal thing.
Yeah, and when they get caught, there's no shame.
It's kind of like saying it might not be hypocrisy, it might be idiocracy.
Yes,
you always
absolutely.
Like to say.
It's the electrolytes. All right, here is Brian Deese. He's the economic advisor. He does have I think this is kind of a positive message to Americans, and we need an uplifting moment at this time.
Our economy is more resilient to the types of challenges that we faced. For example, you know, with respect to food, we're a net exporter of agricultural commodities, and obviously the high prices are hitting Americans very hard. But in a way that is different from some places that are facing famine, for example.
So we don't have famine here. So there's that.
So there you go. We
for
should be
now.
Really thankful we don't have famine, right?
How many people go to the grocery store and they load up their basket and they get that, you know, that cash register rings and rings and they see the total and they go, well, thank God we're a net exporter of food and not in famine. I mean, you know, these people, what are they talking about? And again, these are people who do not walk amongst us. They do not understand. They don't put gas in their own cars, these people, you know, so.
Yeah, I was sharing a story yesterday with a friend of mine who immigrated to the United States, you know, from Central America, and kind of telling a story about how the shelves in the grocery store looked in a, you know, a communist kind of regime country, or, you know, socialist type mindset, whichever side of government. Sometimes the two start to meld together a little, even though they are different philosophies, But in coming to America for the first time, and with his grandmother walking down the aisles of a grocery store and got to the cereal aisle and was just literally like ready to weep and overwhelmed because all of the choices and stuff that you do. But today, that same individual has that story is walking down that same cereal aisle and going,
where's everything at?
Right. Yeah. This is starting to look. It's badly and
well,
grossly
look,
familiar.
Remember, folks, we're not a third world country.
There's a lot of people who have called for shutting down the Jackson Zoo, and I have warned them. You might want to keep that zoo around. In Venezuela, they started eating those animals. I think they made a lot of good stuff out of the flamingos down there in Argentina. We may need to keep those keep those animals fed. We might need them soon. I mean, this is just an absolute disaster. And you know what they're doing? And now they're attacking farming. I mean, it's just every policy is making these things worse.
Yeah. And, you know, Mississippi being the agriculture state that it is, I mean, we need, you know, we've been looking at things like regulatory sandboxes for the agricultural community. And, you know, it's one of those things that we need not just here in Mississippi, we need across America some very sweeping reforms that allow the innovation that we need, because we could be independent again for oil.
Yeah.
But
there
are some opportunities, and it doesn't have to all be subsidized. It could be more about quit spending on subsidies and ridiculous things with our tax dollars. Let's open up for innovation. Let's open up for things that help farmers be more productive, right? Let's open a more free market approach and deregulation around some of this stuff. There's a lot of little people out there. My stepdaughter's up in Virginia, and they have a small little farm. It's been a lifelong dream for them. They finally got the kids to high school, you know, and that kind of stuff. And so they started a small farm, but they're selling eggs. They're selling honey. They're, you know, the hogs are coming. I mean, and it's all great food, you know, but the regulations around in states around some of these people who would love to go out there. I know a couple in Florida that's doing the same thing. They've got young kids, and they're like, you know, we want them to have this kind of more earthbound experience, you know, live on a farm, grow up with some values and principles that mean something to them. But the regulations that often are around these people who are out there growing viable food that could feed people, is ridiculous. It's like, no, we'd rather people starve and, you know, put our foot down on some kind of regulation that makes no sense.
Right.
Listen, going back, I know when I was young, and I know generations of my family here in the state, and shout out to my cousins on the Ballard side of the family that are listening in today. Looking forward to having lunch and participating in some of that good produce here later that we raise here in Mississippi. But I would think that we would get to a point where we would understand there are some solutions here, and they may be a lot of these little small solutions, but it seems like there's just this fear of competition rather than an abundance mindset. Right.
I think that it feels to me like the government at just about every level has been captured. It's just not there to, and you know, all the things you're describing are the things that built the greatest country in the history of the world.
Sure.
It's just people that just went out there. They got into covered wagons with wooden wheels and headed out in the winter into a place with no road.
Tough, you know? P-U-F-F.
Yeah, I mean, we handled up on business and created this great country. Mm-hmm. And then everything, you know, then politics started just going in and micromanaging everything, and it's all turned to crap.
Right, because if they can't tax it or regulate
right.
it, it's like it shouldn't exist. And we have got to get away from that mindset. I mean, look, you know, I grew up eating things that, you know, we pulled out of the ground in the morning,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
and I remember, what was it about? I guess maybe about 10 years ago, maybe a little longer than that. I remember there was some bills that were floating around to sort of regulate what you were growing in your backyard.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
And I had this sort of raised planter garden I had on the side of the house, and I really designed this. You know, I actually even taught a class on how to do it back in Florida. And so, you know, I'd made it, you know, raised planter bed, growing. I was growing corn. I was growing all kinds of things out there. And I loved going out, you know, at night and wanted to make a salad. I went out and got my tomatoes. I got my lettuce. I just pulled it out. And I never thought anything like, you know, and then this bill starts floating around, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go double the size of that garden. This is my property. Mm-hmm. This is the right that I have.
Yeah.
And I was just I was rebellious.
Well, we don't want nobody to die from you planting corn.
Right, exactly. We'd rather, you know, and if I wanted to share that with someone, well, then that was in a whole other set of regulations. But, you know, hey, let's just, you know, we've got people starving in this country. We've got kids who show up for school who don't know. If it weren't for, you know, some of these programs, but it's better just to put everybody in this position of here, you know, the government is going to take care of you. The government's who you should depend on. Well, that's the mindset that a lot of people have come to realize. And now that the government's not really sort of actually taking care of them,
yep.
right? It's a problem. And I think people are starting to wake up. I really do see people starting to say things. Underserved communities are really starting to question stuff in a different way.
I hope
they
so.
Continue to.
Well, the government cannot solve what's coming. They created this problem. They can label all these bills whatever they want to. It's not going to solve anything. People are going to wise up to it. And it's going to be very interesting if we have the economic crisis that I think is coming. I mean, it's coming at some point. I don't know if they can paper over it for a little while longer. They never cease to amaze me at how they can duct tape this economy together. But I think this is kind of the end game for it. You know, it's interesting with the farming and stuff. I think during the Depression, I can't remember the exact statistic, but it was high. 90% of people were involved in, you know, farming, and we were a largely agricultural society. A lot of people knew how to live off the land in this country. Now it's like 10% or 8% of people. So during the Depression, when things really fell out, at least people kind of knew how to take care of themselves. They could produce for themselves, feed their neighbors, those kinds of things. Not now. Now people are going to dollar stores because they can't afford to go to the supermarkets. And when those dollar stores shelves start running, running lean, we're not prepared for a real hardship in this country. We are almost like veal to me. You know, we have just been fed and not exercised our independence and our self-sufficiency for so long. I don't know if you let a veal cow out and just put him out into the wild. I don't think that works out well.
Yeah.
So we're going to see. But anyway, we got to take another break. We're talking to Starla Brown, Stone Clint from Americans for Prosperity. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
Falling. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 1039 WYAB. We're doing a Freedom and Prosperity Hour with Americans for Prosperity, as we do, Starla Brown, Stone Clinton. So tell me, Americans for Prosperity, you're very active here. You're active around the country, but active here in Mississippi, trying to lead some kind of grassroots, get some support for ideas of freedom and economic prosperity in the state of Mississippi. How can people get involved? You guys are always doing stuff.
Yeah, so we just had that Torchbearer meeting this past Tuesday that you attended with Foundational Education.
That was fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was great. I'm sad I couldn't be there, but I know that that conversation had to be good. This Saturday, we're going to be calling for freedom out of state. We'll be calling from Saturday. On Saturday from 10 to 1, you can get in contact with me at sclanton, C-L-A-N, T-O-N at AFPHQ.org or 601-300-9536. And like I said, Saturday, 10 to 1, we'll have a little lunch that everybody can either go out and get lunch or we can have something there in the office. And then next Tuesday from 5 to 7. And you can, again, you can get in contact with me at 601-300-9536.
And what are you doing exactly? Well, you're making phone calls?
So our sister partner, Americans for Prosperity Action, we don't have anything going on so much here in the state of Mississippi. There are other states, and the goal there is really to get policy champions into office. This Tuesday, we went 8-1 in some of our efforts there.
Oh, this is in primaries around the country?
Yeah. So we went 8-1, they're going to be in our, you know, they're going to really be the highlight for that. So if you want to check out what they're doing, you know, come by our office on Saturday or come to Tuesday, as Stone was saying, and you know, you can engage and we can help get some policy champions out there, because the people in those seats who take those votes matter.
I know.
And sometimes, like we just talked about earlier today, it comes down to one person.
Yeah.
Who makes that final decision.
It's such a bad system that, you know, that I have to care what some, you know, some representative of Missouri says about what we do here in Mississippi. That's a seems like a bad system to me when they've got this level of power. I don't know if it was ever really intended for that, but y'all did some stuff for DeSantis. Y'all worked through it.
Our sister partner, some of the people who volunteered with us already have been calling into Florida. We've called into several states, Tennessee, Missouri, Ohio, you know, it's been across the board. But there's still more to do before November. So if you want to help out those individuals, you know, certainly get in touch with Stone. He can tell you more about it.
And we'll see it on Facebook and all of our social medias too.
Yeah. Where is DeSantis in Florida? Is he close? What are they looking at for that election?
You know, I don't know the answer. I haven't looked at the polling much right now. I think we call it the Free State of Florida for a reason.
Yeah,
so
it just feels like it's a slam dunk, but it's not, is it?
And you know what? Nothing should ever be considered a slam dunk. It's kind of, I look at it this way: whether you're talking about that side of things or you're talking about when those elected officials, often. Once they get into office, that's when people go by the wayside, you know, and forget to continue to check. But listen, when the government is in session, when people are in office, they are making decisions that impact your life.
And that's when our 501c4 steps into play, and we hold these people accountable.
Right. Yeah. And so you know, with us over at Americans for Prosperity, we're, you know, our goal really is to really transform things, but to pass lasting policy, you know. You know, we get up and, you know, there's a law here, here's a law, and that whack-a-mole kind of scenario of like, well, okay, let's go put a Band-Aid on this, let's go put a Band-Aid on that. We have to shift the paradigm of how people see government. And that's an important thing.
Amen.
We really have to shift the paradigm. The government is not supposed to be what brings you happiness. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That needs to be your individual liberty and your own success in your own life. But the government makes decisions that impact your happiness. And when they put up barriers, when they put up things that don't allow people to unleash their potential, don't allow them to live a meaningful life, and really, you know, we talk about equal rights, and we've said this before. I'm talking about the equal rights out of the Bill of Rights, right? That sort of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. When government does things that affect that, and I don't think there's a person out here right now that's not being impacted in some way by inflation other than maybe the clip we played earlier, because she's just fine. Don't worry about the rest of us. Well, but
we don't know those.
But
people,
I'm impacted, and I can tell you right now. Every time I, you know, fill up my car or I buy groceries, I'm impacted. All of us are, and some people, you know, the least among us are impacted the worst, right? And so the consideration here of thinking that your life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is not impacted, that your actual rights are being taken away from you because of what government is doing to you and this type of bills that are going to tax further, spend further, and increase inflation and not reduce it. You know, you can give this any name you want. You can spin it any way you want, but this is a tax and spend bill.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting to me that I think that this administration is up against this. They are trying to convince people who are living this experience of adversity when it comes to crime, when it comes to inflation. They are trying to convince people that it's not bad, that you're doing okay, that the labor market is strong, that the economy is resilient. I mean, they are literally trying to tell people, you know, what you're experiencing isn't the reality. Everything's going great. We're just going to do more of what we've been doing, you know, and I don't think people are having it. That's why, you know, Biden's got such low approval ratings. People just do not believe this idea. They cannot mask this any longer.
Well, there's a point in time when you know, you can't believe what you could actually experience and see.
Right.
If somebody's telling you, like, hey, it's okay. You're fine. Go to the grocery store. Buy some groceries. It's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not starving.
Right. You're not
it's
starving.
It's almost like the kind of gaslighting a little bit.
Yeah. No famine yet. Right. So,
right.
So I mean, you know, we're all right. But look, there are things coming that we haven't seen yet. And you know, I was talking to a young man the other day, and, you know, he was just mentioning, I mentioned something about the layoffs, and he was mentioning the fact that, yeah, my father has works for, or, you know, or has some sort of investment into a fairly sizable company, and they are talking about layoffs.
Yeah.
They've started those conversations because you talked about restaurants, right? They can't afford to pay their rent. Do you think they can afford to pay their employees if they can't afford to pay their rent, right? And and the, you know, and so what's going to go first, right? Am I going to try to keep my business open and maybe lay off some people and, you know, tighten the belt a little further, see what I can do, raise some prices, try to figure out, you know, am I going to have this extra employee, or am I going to maybe try to market myself or something, you know, try to get customers in the door? And so, but the customers can't come in the door if the customers don't have the money to spend, right?
I
mean, you know,
you're making decisions.
We're all making decisions. You know, we talked about in the break, right? I wanted something the other day, and, you know, not that I couldn't afford it, but it was a decision that I wouldn't maybe have thought about as much in the past, because I was like, well, you know, and not only that, but even people sitting in a fairly good place are like saying, well, hey, I don't know what's going to happen here with this economy. I don't know what it's going to look like in 2 or 3 months based on the type of policy that's coming down the pike. So people sometimes become just more reserved, even if they have the means or the income. And so this is where we are. It's not a good spot. But I think we have to make people have to get out and vote. They have to make some decisions. And I know that not all of those are going to be perfect. I get that. You know, I get that. But some people have been making some bad decisions with their vote over the last few years. Maybe should really think about making some serious changes and really, really waking up to this. And I think people, like you said, people are tired. They're fed up.
Yeah. The worse it gets, unfortunately, it's almost like, you know, sometimes you don't pay attention to an issue until it happens to your child or happens to your family.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is coming for a lot of people, and I think people are going to have to get engaged in this and go, oh my gosh, you know, this now it's me. There are a lot of people. We've been very comfortable in this country. I mean, they have, the printing of money, what they've done has made us relatively still very comfortable here. Mm-hmm. Some of that comfortableness is going to slip away, and people then are going to have to say, well, you know, we might need to change some things. All right, we've got to take one more break. We're talking to Starla Brown, Stone Clanton with Americans for Prosperity. We'll let you know how you can reach them and how you can get involved with their group when we come back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
Falling. All right, we only got a couple of minutes left talking to Starla Brown and Stone Clanton from Americans for Prosperity. So y'all just use the last couple of minutes, tell us what you got going on, how people can get involved, and how they can find you.
Yeah, again, so our sister organization, Americans for Prosperity Action, is going to be making phone calls this Saturday from 10 to 1. We'll have a lunch there. And then also next Tuesday from 5 to 7. And then apart from that, our Americans for Prosperity is going to be over in Meridian soon, doing a lot of work, doing some more grassroots leadership training classes. And then again, our next Torchbearer meeting is going to be the first Tuesday of September. I believe that's the 6th. And we'll be talking about regulatory sandboxes that day.
Yeah. So. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So when, come out and give us a hand. You want to get involved. You don't know what you want to get involved in, but you know you have that desire to go out and do some grassroots activism. Even if you're part of an organization and you just want to do it better, I mean, we have training programs available. Stone, I like to think we can do it all, but we can't. And so obviously people out there, but if you're an organization even, and you're just thinking like, hey, you know, we want to multiply what we're doing, you know, our group wants to work harder on something. We're happy to provide that training to help you be better at activism. And so, you know, grassroots is going to be something we want to see grow in Mississippi. And
I think it will.
On a good path here right now. We're excited. We're reaching out. I'm heading up to the northeast part of the state here in a couple of weeks. Going to spend some time up in that area.
They seem to be kind of the freedom lovers in our state. There's a lot of people. DeSoto County area seems to have something in the water up there.
I found some people in Amory and Aberdeen and Starkville and believe it or not in Oxford, right? So yeah. We're I'm just saying that because of Mississippi State Ole Miss, but we're going to be getting the message out, and we're going to continue on this federal level to talk to people and we have ways for them to take action. It's as easily as taking out your cell phone, putting your camera on, and you can send a letter and an email directly to your legislator. So,
and find out more about us on AFPMS on Facebook, and we'll get in touch with y'all.
Okay. Well, great. Well, that's Stone Clanton, Starla Brown. We're glad to have y'all in again, and we'll keep up with you. The meetings are great, and you meet a lot of like-minded people at those things, so it's a good organization to get involved with. That's all the time we got today. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.